This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's gone. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Race and Fraud, Franz Boas. I'm speaking here of fraud deliberately, but not in the strict legal sense, but in the sense of the word that it represents an intentional deception for gain, deceit, trickery, to get something of value. And it's a racial fraud. It's a defrauding of one race by another. I have two important points to make, and I'm going to move along pretty quickly here to get to both of them and do justice to both. The first point I want to make is, I alluded to in previous installments, that the Jews had come to dominate in anthropology and in the social sciences, and I'm going to cite a few more sources on that. One comes from jinfo.org, which I gather is a sympathetic to Jews, and it states, Jews played a significant role in the founding and subsequent development of modern anthropology. Two of its four principal founders, according to Jerry Moore in his study Visions of Culture and Introduction to Anthropological Theories and Theorists, were Emile Durkheim and Franz Boas. Of the 21 major theorists profiled by Moore, six were Jews. Similarly, Jews are the subjects of about 30% of the 42 biographical entries contained in the Dictionary of Anthropology. Two of the five major biographical articles in the Encyclopedia of Social and Cultural Anthropology deal with the work of Boas and Claude Lévi-Strauss. They provide a list, both a short list of the most important and a longer list of the Jews who were important in anthropology. And on the short list, Franz Boas, Emile Durkheim, Claude Lévi-Strauss, and another one named Marshall Sollins, who I'll get to in later installments. Now back to Kevin MacDonald's Chapter 2, The Boasian School of Anthropology and the Decline of Darwinism in the Social Sciences, that I started with last week. I want to pick up again and cite a paragraph here that he included in his paper. By 1915, the Boasians controlled the American Anthropological Association and held a two-thirds majority on its executive board. In 1919, Boas could state that most of the anthropological work done at the present time in the United States was done by his students at Columbia. By 1926, every major department of anthropology was headed by Boas's students, the majority of whom were Jewish. I want to read again another paragraph that I had cited last week because I think it's very important and I want to make some extra points about it. The preponderance of Jewish intellectuals in the early years of Boasian anthropology and the Jewish identities of the anthropologists in subsequent generations has been downplayed in standard histories of the discipline. Jewish identifications and the pursuit of perceived Jewish interests, particularly in advocating an ideology of cultural pluralism as a model for Western societies, has been the invisible subject of American anthropology. Invisible because the ethnic identifications and ethnic interests of its advocates have been masked by a language of science in which such identifications and interests were publicly illegitimate. The invisible subject is the Jewish domination of anthropology. And this recalls, and I want to recall here, Fritz Lenz and what he had to say about animal mimicry. This was several installments ago when I quoted him, and he had made the observation that wherever a living creature gains advantages in the struggle for existence by acquiring a resemblance to some other organism, that's what he described as animal mimicry, and that he thought that the Jews were using that, or had used that historically, to induce others to accept their guidance. And I see this movement here, this Boasian anthropology and the Jewish takeover of social sciences, as being an example of that exactly. The animal mimicry is a biological understanding of what happened. It actually fits race science up until that point. The understanding of what happened matches what the race scientists thought was going on. There was a struggle for survival. And the way the Boasian anthropologists did it was by posing as objective scientists, mainly social scientists, and inducing others to accept their guidance, that this is exactly what happened. And they did it for their own advantage in the struggle for existence. So this is where the fraud comes in, that they, using deception, they got something, they gained something, and somebody else lost. The Madison Grant people lost, the Nordicists, and the white race lost. Another bit from MacDonald. He cites someone named Wolf, describes the attack of the Boasians as calling into question the moral and physical or political monopoly of a Gentile elite, which had justified its rule with a claim that their superior virtue was the outcome of the evolutionary process. A few things to say about this. The Jews today are the ones who have the moral and political monopoly, and they justify it by saying it doesn't exist, by not even acknowledging it. When anyone criticizes it, they pretend that the Jewish lobby, for instance, doesn't exist. So they disguise it by denial and punishment for those who dissent. And if the Gentile elite, the previous Anglo-Saxon core elite that had led America, had been a true monopoly, and it had been so complete, and they had been as sensitive to competition as ruthless as about defending their interests as the Jews are, then they would never have lost their monopoly. But they did lose their monopoly, or whatever you want to call it, their domination. And they lost it as soon as they gave up on the premise that their society, with them in charge, was superior to any other society with them not in charge. Do you understand what I'm saying? The Jews, they think that way about themselves and their position in society. And they didn't even create the society. They usurped it from the previous creators, the Anglo-Saxon people, the Anglo-Saxon elite, that had helped to create the American society. And that's why, of course, they can't acknowledge it openly, because they're usurpers. And they did it illegitimately through deception. And they still don't have complete control. And they're afraid what will happen if people come to realize this. The more general point I want to make here is only you can be you. You're the best and the superior person for that job. That's the sense that I'm talking about that the Anglo-Saxons lost. You can believe it because of evolution. You can believe it because of God. It really doesn't matter what rationale. But, you know, it's as simple as realizing that if you don't think that way, then you're going to stop existing. And I'm speaking here collectively now, as not just only as an individual, but as a group, as a race. So I think I'm ready now to move on to the second, maybe bigger subject here. That was really just wrapping up things I had left undone and unsaid from last time. I'm going to move on now here to something I mentioned in the first installment where I talked about Boas. I think that was part 4 of Race and Anthropology. And that's about his relatively recent, it was about 10 years ago, that his numbers were recomputed or reanalyzed on skull dimensions, the cephalic index computations that he had done. And they were found to be wrong. And nobody had examined them from his original published, when he originally published in 1912 or something. So I'll cite a few links for this, and I want to read a few things here and react to them having to do with this fraud and its uncovery its discovery or uncovering in about 2002. The first article I could cite here is titled Boas, Bones, and Race, written by Charles Fergus, who at the time, this is in May 2003, was a doctoral candidate in anthropology. And he was writing not to other anthropologists, but as to a general audience to try and explain what the controversy was all about. And he starts off by writing, "In the 19th century, anthropologists argued that skull capacity equated directly with intelligence. Caucasians, so the theory went, had larger brains and thus were smarter than American Indians and people of African descent. It was a convenient, if false, viewpoint in a white-dominated society." Well, the reality is that Charles Fergus is the one offering the false viewpoint. The modern science actually does show a correlation between brain capacity and intelligence. There are still some people who insist, kicking and screaming, that there is no relation, but other scientists have found it and demonstrated it with data that's been double-checked. In particular, there's the Neanderthal that has gone extinct, but its brain capacity was larger, and so they think that it was actually smarter than the Homo sapiens that that ultimately replaced it. This issue of white dominated, you know, as if there's something wrong with that. Nobody complains about blacks dominating black societies or Asians dominating Asian societies. And whatever excuse they come up with for their domination, it's okay. In fact, nobody even asks. If you ask, you know, why are Chinese in charge of China? Isn't that racist? No, you're the racist for asking the question. But it's with white people, it's flipped on its head. It just seems normal and natural to pathologize white people for wanting to dominate their own society. The actual point that the Grantians made was not really about skull or brain size. It was about the shape of the skull being an indicator, one of many, for racial distinctions. And they were talking about racial distinctions between Europeans. They weren't even talking about the difference between Europeans and Africans or Asians. The other metrics were, or the other indicators were things like hair color, eye color, the stature, you know, the heaviness of the bones and so forth. Modern day anthropologists, forensic anthropologists use something like 80 different metrics commonly when they look at a skeleton and try and identify it. I think I've got something about that to talk about a little later. But he does go on, and the article does a decent job of at least presenting what the controversy is about. In 1912, Franz Boas stunned the world of anthropology by reporting striking differences in cranial form between American-born children of immigrants and their European-born parents. That's the fraud. After collecting and analyzing measurements from over 13,000 subjects, Boas proclaimed that the environment, not heredity, determined skull shape. The skull was plastic. You couldn't use it to reliably distinguish ethnicity or race, let alone intellect. And that's what turned out to be horse poop. This article goes on to say that Boas found that nobody knew what a race really was. Instead, human form and behavior stem from environment, the foods a person ate, the kind of home he or she grew up in, the society in which the individual belonged. Well, first of all, I don't think Boas even himself really said that. He was anti-racist, but I don't think he went that far. I think this is a modern-day, retrospective, totally anti-racist, race doesn't exist view of what Boas did. But here's where we get to the controversial part and the uncovering of the fraud. Recently, two physical anthropologists reanalyzed Boas's head form data. They report that Boas, now considered the founding father of modern American anthropology, was wrong. Well, another thing to say here is that race was indeed ambiguous, and some people used it at fine grain for synonymous, a meaning synonymous with nation. Others used it like Madison Grant did. In a medium grain, grouping people like Nordics, Alpines, and Mediterraneans. Others considered things like Anglo-Saxon to be a race. And then race is also used as a word to describe the continental scale groupings, white Europeans or black Africans or yellow Asians. But just because there's ambiguity about the scale doesn't mean that the concept itself doesn't exist. And I think the lesson, as we dig deeper here into the science of race, is that there are racial differences. And whether just because it's become popular to deny that race exists doesn't mean that the science went away. And in fact, that's one of the takeaways from this re-examination of the data in 2002, is that they found that indeed there were differences and they were stable. They weren't plastic. This fuzziness issue, this way of saying, well, you know, nobody knows what they're talking about when they talk about race, just because it's a fuzzy concept and it's hard to determine where the exact boundaries are. You know, where does white stop? At the boundaries of Europe, or does it include the people living in the Middle East? They point to those kind of problems and they say, oh, well, we have to just give up on the whole idea. And that's ridiculous, because this problem, as I've mentioned before, is a general problem of classification. And it's called, in biology, it's called the species problem. You know, where exactly are the boundaries between species? What exactly do you call a species? How do you define a species? Just because there's an Atlantic Ocean and a Pacific Ocean and a Mediterranean Ocean doesn't mean that there's no oceans, just because there's places where you're sort of between the two. Anyway, the two scientists, the two anthropologists who questioned this and re-examined this data were Corey Sparks, a doctoral candidate at Penn State, and Richard Jans, a professor at the University of Tennessee. And they published their findings on October 7th in 2002. So the reason why is because what they noted themselves is that morphometricians, which is what they call themselves, which I guess is a body shape scientists, anthropologists, especially for forensics, when you're examining a skeleton, you want to know more about the person that skeleton belonged to. You're trying to identify them. It helps to know whether they were black or white. And it turns out that these morphometricians, by measuring the bones, can figure it out a good deal of the time. And they were always being criticized by people that, don't you know that Boas proved that stuff doesn't matter? So finally, frustrated with that, they reexamine the data. But just a note here about these morphometricians. By thoroughly measuring a skull, some morphometricians believe that they can correctly identify its owner's continent of ancestral origin. That's the unwieldy euphemism people have to use for race now, because everybody knows race doesn't exist. With up to 90% accuracy, they can state that a skull comes from a person whose forebears originated in Africa, Europe, or Asia. So in their paper itself, the introduction to the paper, the synopsis of their 2002 paper, I'll read this part because it's kind of scientific ease, but it states it very well. Results indicate the relatively high genetic component of the head and face diameters despite the environmental differences during development. Results point to very small and insignificant differences between European and American barn offspring, and no effect of exposure to the American environment on the cranial index in children. These results contradict Boas's original findings and demonstrate that they may no longer be used to support arguments of plasticity in cranial morphology. So that's it, really. And Wikipedia notes that there have been people complaining that this is wrong and no, Boas was right, and this will go on for quite some time. It's gone on for 10 years now, and still there's a controversy. It seems to me like what's happening is scientists have just decided to go their own way, and just they're paying attention to the data that they see. They have to make up euphemisms like continental groupings to talk about instead of race, but they go about their business. And you've got the Jewish-run social sciences that say, no, race doesn't exist, and they just seem to be diverging and getting farther and farther apart. Hopefully at one point that dam will burst, and we'll be able to talk honestly about race. But I don't think that it will happen as long as the Jews run society, or at least the social sciences. So Boas once wrote, referring to racist anthropology, that far-reaching theories have been built on weak foundations. And once again, it's actually ironic. It applies even more to anti-racism. Anti-racism is this theory, if you could even call it a theory, that race doesn't exist. It's built on no foundation at all, except a ruthless desire to suppress any discussion or investigation of racial differences, and that it's done using fraud, using censorship, and taking advantage of whites being gullible and with our wishful thinking that, oh yeah, let's hope that there is really no difference, because I'm afraid of being fired from my job if I say something different. I'm afraid of not getting tenure if I investigate race differences. In Boas's correspondence with his friends, rivals, and even enemies, there was a distaste for scientific racism of his era. And as a Jew, he no doubt understood firsthand the effects of racism on minority groups. And let me see, I'm reading a section here from, I think this might have been written by Jans. We make no claims that his calculations were purposely skewed, but it does not seem possible that he chose to ignore variation in skull shape between populations because he believed it might, oh, it does seem possible, because he believed it might contribute to racist anthropology. Jans and the other fellow don't, Sparks and Jans, they really don't want to be called anti-Semites, so they kind of tiptoe around this issue, but it's obvious that from some of the things I mentioned last week, too, that Boas had a strong Jewish identity, even though he didn't wear it on his sleeve so much. In private, he did express it and did express that that was part of his motivation for doing what he was doing. And the thing about Boas is he had a strong statistical background. He understood the mathematics. He knew how to do mathematics. And even later on, when the more advanced techniques became available, more advanced, newer statistical methods, Boas never went back and rechecked his data. And actually, I can understand why Boas wouldn't. I mean, after all, he had released this study, the results of it, and it had been welcomed to wide acclaim. Why should he go back and double check? That was really up to other people to go and do. And finally, Sparks and Jans did that. But this is a broader point that I want to make here, too, that it wasn't just Boas that did all of this. I mean, a lot of people make him out as this giant that did it all, but he is really just a figurehead for a larger group. You know, he provided the rationale, the result that skulls are plastic, and other people took that and ran with it. It was a team effort. It wasn't just Boas, and the team was predominantly a Jewish team that was well aware of their Jewish interests, their group interests. And that's the fraud again. I can't emphasize that enough. Here they were denying that race exists, all the while knowing that they themselves really constituted a genetically related subset of humankind that they thought was really special and they wanted to preserve, and they were willing to do anything to preserve it. They were willing to lie. They were willing to exaggerate. They were willing to defame other people and browbeat them. About one of the challenges to Jans and Sparks. Coincidentally, as of this writing, another paper by anthropologists at the University of Michigan, the University of Florida, and Northwestern University is scheduled for publication in American Anthropologist. it concludes that Boas correctly interpreted his head form data. But according to Jans, these present-day anthropologists fail to acknowledge Boas's error in comparing children's skull sizes with adult skull sizes. That was one of the errors he made, according to Sparks and Jans. Nor, points out Sparks, do they consider cranial differences between the ethnic groups. And it turns out that the skull data that Boas worked on actually had broken down and analyzed different ethnic groups. And there was a significant difference between the skull measurements, the cephalic indexes of the different ethnic groups. And this latter-day group here that thinks that their results support Boas, despite Sparks and Jans, completely neglect to even consider that. And that was one of the things that Sparks and Jans, when they re-examined, they noted that there was slight change due to immigration, but it came nowhere close to erasing the differences between the different ethnic groups. So I think I've actually done it. I've gotten through the two main subjects that I wanted to get through. Let me just flip back and make sure that I've covered everything. Let me emphasize again this point about nobody can be you but you, and that's what the Anglo-Saxon elite in the United States forgot and were ultimately displaced, and it was ultimately bad for them, and it's bad for white people in general today, not just the Nordics, not just the Anglo-Saxons, but white people as a whole, as a broad group in the United States. All right, so let me get to my conclusion here, and that is, in the struggle for survival, I've said before that politics is war by other means, and what we see here in this long series that I've been doing is that history and science and anthropology is really the combination of history and science, and the social sciences in general are also battlegrounds, that academics in general is war by other means. That anti-racism is more or less covert anti-whiteism. The old saying is, it's not anti-racism, it's anti-white. It's aggression, it's ethnic aggression, and it's aimed primarily at whites. The triumph of anti-racism goes beyond Boas. He's just a figurehead. There were others, many of them were Jews, if not most of them. You could notice the Jewish nature of the team on the other side working against race. And that's what I hope to get to in some of the subsequent installments to this one. Where they were working, what they did, and what the other tactics were that they were using. And we're going to shift forward in time. It's going to be more on science. But with more names, that some of which I've mentioned previously, but we'll get into more detail in the same way I have with Boas. And I hope you're enjoying this series. I am. And kind of silly, I'm just making up for time here, but please join me the next time.